Les colloques du Collège de France.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's really a great pleasure to be here, so thank you very much, Claire and Edith, for this invitation. What I will share with you today is really ongoing work that started in the lab. Well, the lab started almost 2 years ago, so it's all ongoing and very preliminary, but I thought it would still be interesting to share it with you and get your feedback at this early stage. So usually we talk about X inactivation as having evolved to equalize X-linked expression between the sexes. Of course, this is a bit of an oversimplification because, in truth, natural selection does not operate at the level... Natural selection operates at the level of the individual and does not really operate on the balance between the sexes. So we're not really talking about equalizing expression between the sexes, but rather having, for each individual, a balance between X-linked expression and autosomal expression, which just needs to be compatible with life and reproduction in each sex. And so this was at the basis of Ono's hypothesis that Vincent just presented, so I will not go into it. And throughout, I will purposefully ignore considerations about X chromosome upregulation, because actually, with or without it, compensation in the females still has to happen. And so why is it so important to have dosage compensation between X-linked expression and autosomal expression? And so the main current hypothesis, I would say, is that, of course, this dosage compensation would be especially important for dosage-sensitive genes, so genes for which gene dosage changes will lead to phenotypical consequences, often deleterious, such as the case for haploinsufficient genes. So dosage-sensitive genes typically encode factors for which there are stoichiometry constraints, such as subunits of large complexes, transcription factors, members of signal transduction pathways, or microRNAs. And some years ago, the lab of Gabriel Marais and colleagues analyzed RNA sequencing data from different male and female tissues, human tissues, and they observed that separated data for genes that were involved in actually small protein complexes versus large protein complexes, they could see that for the large for genes involved in large protein complexes, dosage compensation was higher than for the others. So leading them to propose that X inactivation evolved dosage compensation mechanism for dosage-sensitive genes on the X. And so I would argue that this is the model that is accepted in the field, even if actually functionally it remains mostly untested. And so much so that there are actually alternative models, and I will just mention them for the sake of being exhaustive. So there's authors that have suggested that dosage compensation for the X evolved for sex determination. So this is actually not mutually exclusive with the dosage-sensitive genes, but here the idea is that X inactivation evolved to help the process of sex determination, which, of course, as we heard earlier from James Turner, in mammals it depends mostly on the SRY gene, on the Y chromosome, but it still depends on balanced expression of different factors, and so some of which would be on the X chromosome, and therefore X inactivation would favor this balance and prevent XX embryos from becoming males. There's also an hypothesis of the insensitive X chromosome. And so this hypothesis argues that there's no dosage compensation is needed because the X is depleted of dosage-sensitive genes based on the fact that X-linked expression is much noisier than autosomal expression, so dosage compensation would be less important, and the fact that also many housekeeping genes, or most housekeeping genes, which are typically dosage-sensitive, are preferentially located on autosomes. Having said that, this hypothesis that then leaves it open to why did X inactivation evolve in the female mammals. So in the lab, we are really interested in functionally addressing this matter. So which genes on the X Are dosage sensitive, if any, and could they explain the emergence of X chromosome inactivation? So, or in other words, we are actually looking after which genes on the X absolutely need to have one copy silenced. And so identifying these genes is not just interesting from a fundamental and evolutionary perspective, but of course clinically relevant, because some diseases are associated with reactivation of genes from the X chromosome, as recently and beautifully shown by some of the people here in the audience. And so knowing which genes might contribute more significantly to harmful phenotypes can be helpful to develop targeted therapies, for example. So these questions have been challenging to address because, of course, there's hundreds of genes on the X. Dosage sensitivity can be highly context specific. And we need somehow to mimic the absence of X inactivation at the single gene level. So how could we mimic this? So, of course, we could think of preventing the silencing of specific genes as X inactivation occurs, but, you know, maybe one day when we understand escape, we'll be able to do this, so this is not an option for the moment. We could think of reactivating individual genes from the inactive X, but this is also not trivial, as several people have shown. So what we thought instead was to overexpress single genes from the active X chromosome to test whether they would lead to dosage-sensitive phenotypes. So in the lab, we are trying to identify such genes, and Pravinen, who's here in the audience, is actually looking at a few candidate genes, and so X-linked subunits of the mediator complex and the cohesin complex. I will not go into these, we just started, but if you're interested, discuss with Pravinen. And in parallel, Daniela Chekalev, a PhD student in the lab, has been taking a more unbiased and systematic approach by using CRISPR activation screens. So here the idea is to, as I said, upregulate single genes from the X chromosome. We are using at the moment a ES cell line where there is a CRISPR activation system genomically integrated in XY cells. So this is from Pablo Navarro's lab. And Daniela is currently establishing XO and XX system as well. So we transduce this cell line with a lentiviral library of guide RNAs that target promoters of X-linked genes. This is a library developed in Ada Schultz's lab, and basically the guide RNAs target X-linked genes that are expressed in ES cells and during early differentiation. So here's a summary of this library, where we have at least six guide RNAs per gene, X-linked gene. We also have some autosomal controls that you will see appear later. So the idea here really is to overexpress one X-linked gene per cell and then induce differentiation and assess over time what are which cells are represented over time. And at the end of the, at different time points, we just sequence the guide RNA cassettes to assess the frequency of cells for each X-linked gene. So here's just the experimental setup. So after transducing the library, we induce the system. I forgot to say, but it's inducible. So we can induce it just before starting differentiation. And then we collect samples at different time points. We do the gDNA extraction, PCR the guide RNA cassette, and do amplicon sequencing. Just a word to mention that, so this is a dox-inducible system, so we actually see silencing of the system during differentiation, as assessed here by GFP expression, because the system is coupled to GFP. So really what we are testing here, it's the effects of like a pulse of overexpression during early differentiation. So can we retrieve dosage-sensitive candidates on the X with this kind of approach? This was the first question. And so here, the results I'll be showing you in this volcano plot. So on the x-axis, you have the fold change, and on the y-axis, you have the significance. And so, of course, at day zero, there's no heat. We are comparing the frequencies of the guide RNAs to the original frequencies in the library, in the lentiviral library. So, At day zero, no heats. At day four, we also see no heats. But from day eight, we start seeing some genes that are depleted. And at day 12, we have both depleted genes and a few genes that are enriched. So these results seem to be so specific to when we overexpress X-linked genes, because when we don't overexpress, there's no no hits at day 12. And they also seem to be, most of them, specific to differentiation, because we ran the screen in ES cells without differentiation, and after 12 days, we only retrieve two hits that we also retrieve here. But so most of them seem to be differentiation specific. So here's a list of the genes that we retrieved and what they are. We were reassured to see, for example, MET14, which was recently shown to, you know, upregulation of MET14 leads to impairment of mammary stem cell differentiation, leads to overproliferation by the stabilization of the mediator complex. So that aligns well with what we're seeing now. We also retrieved, for example, NROB1, which codes for DAX1, a transcription factor that has been implicated in dosage-sensitive functions. And so, well, our numbers are, of course, very low. But if we look at how many of these genes are involved in code for subunits of large complexes, we have a slight enrichment over the overall X chromosome. So, of course, the next steps will be to validate these candidates and assess also what is actually causing the enrichment or the depletion. You know, are we impacting cell proliferation, differentiation? So these, we are agnostic to this in the screen, so we don't know that yet. And of course, ultimately, it would be interesting to modulate the overexpression to a level that would mimic the absence of X inactivation. So in theory, the twofold, because of course, in this kind of screen, we can have overexpression of various levels depending on the gene. And so for this, we are developing the CasTuner app, inspired by the CasTuner developed in Ada Schulz's lab, where basically we have the same system but coupled to a Degron, so we'll hopefully be able to tune how much overexpression we achieve. So Daniela is also interested in understanding whether we see lineage specification for these candidate genes. So she's now, sorry, I forgot to mention that. So in the screen, we used just leaf withdrawal as a differentiation strategy, and leaf withdrawal just basically, you know, it's an unguided differentiation, and we get different types of populations. So now Daniela is doing directed differentiations either into neural progenitor cells, gonadal progenitors, or primitive endoderm to assess whether we get different results for these different cell types. And so we don't have the results yet for the neural progenitors and the gonadal progenitors, but for the Xen cells, what we can see, perhaps, you know, not surprisingly, while some genes seem to be common to both screens, others seem to be specific. So we'll be very interested in dissecting why, you know, in some cases, some genes would show dosage-sensitive effects, but not for others. And so before finishing, I would just say, so these are the open questions we're trying to address. Of course, this all relates also to something that Vincent just mentioned before, which is, you know, what are the developmental consequences when there is no random X inactivation, which remains an open question because, as Edith also mentioned, it's difficult in vitro with ES cells. But Melanie Paez in the lab, a postdoc who's also here, so you're also very welcome to discuss with Melanie. She's been establishing an embryoid model called the gastroloids, which actually kind of mimic the post-implantation mouse embryo in terms of you know, elongation, symmetry breaking, also some gene expression patterns, and so they can easily be generated from mouse embryonic stem cells. And you know, within 2 months, Melanie has already managed to establish some. And so this is something we'll be exploring in the future. So that's what I have to share with you. I want to thank the lab members, of course, who are were, you know, very brave and generous to join a young team. And I want to thank also our collaborations, of course, Edda Schulz, as I mentioned, Katia Ancelin at the Institut Cochin, Christophe Audouard and Fatima El-Marjou for work that we're trying to do in vivo, and Virginie for the bioinformatic analysis, and I'll thank the funding. And just before finishing, I will announce that next year we will have the sixth, I believe, X-in activation meeting. So to break the news, you're all invited, welcome to join, of course. It will be an EMBO workshop like last time. It will happen in October next year. And I'm co-organizing it with Edda, with Asato, Iku, Mitinori, and Takashi. So thank you very much.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.